Hello and welcome to South Asia Chat, brought to you by the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. I'm your host, Nitya Subramanian, an editor at the Institute. The acceptance of the Indo-Pacific as a single strategic construct linking the contiguous waters of the Western Pacific and the Indian Ocean has gained currency in India in the last few years. The rise of China across the Indian and Pacific Oceans has also challenged the security of the region. To tell us more on India's role in the Indo-Pacific, we have with us Ms. Darshana M. Barua, a non-resident scholar with the South Asia Program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Darshana is also currently a visiting fellow at the Sasakawa Peace Foundation, Tokyo, where she is working on a book about the significance of strategic islands in the Indian Ocean region. Her primary research focuses on maritime security in Asia and the role of the Indian Navy in a new security architecture. Thank you for joining us today. So I'd like to start by asking you that for a long time, there was considerable ambivalence in India's thinking about the Indo-Pacific. Has the ambivalence yielded place to clarity now? If so, what are the basic tenets of the new thinking?
Thank you, Nitya. It's great to be able to do this podcast with you. I think India's thinking towards the Indo-Pacific is still a work in progress, but there's certainly been more clarity today. A key area was defining or even realizing what is Delhi trying to achieve through the Indo-Pacific and in the Indo-Pacific. Today, that clarity comes in terms of India's interest in increasing its role and profile across the region. It is something that Delhi has also started acknowledging in its statements and speeches. And in fact, even the Ministry of External Affairs defined it in its 2019 annual report, saying it envisions a role for bigger role for itself through the Indo-Pacific. And I think that's at the core, at the heart of India's interest today. Having outlined the interest and what really is it that India is trying to achieve, then comes the question of how. How does India increase its role and profile in the region, given the capacity and the capital constraints? So I would think this would be the second end of its Indo-Pacific thinking. And here, India's focus on partnerships come to play. The Indo-Pacific provides a number of options for Delhi to expand its presence and offer initiatives through collaborations. The number of maritime partnerships alone have increased significantly under the Indo-Pacific vision, so much so that the maritime security today has become an important point in India's foreign policy engagements, which is a fairly recent development. Through the Indo-Pacific, India has expanded its engagements across the Indian and the Pacific Ocean, and through collaborations and initiatives with littorals and key partners in the region. These partnerships have somewhere allowed India to cast a very wide net in its vision to increase its regional profile. And it has also helped to a great extent strengthen bilateral and regional views on India. There is an increased amount of support toward India in the region today, which is something that perhaps India did not enjoy in this quantity before. Whether it is at international forums or regional institutions or even the UNSC seat, India enjoys a lot of support from key players such as the US, Japan, Australia, France, which carries its impact in the across the global stage. And finally, if a third point or a third tenet of India's Indo-Pacific thinking would be, I feel this is the stage perhaps where we are at currently. It's really about implementing the Indo-Pacific initiatives. Now that Delhi has defined its interest and identified its key partners, the question is, what can India provide? What are its capabilities? And there are, of course, many initiatives already underway and many that have been in conversations. The China threat or the problem, or the problem of a big neighbor is only getting bigger for India. This is something India did not have to engage with directly when it started engaging with Indo-Pacific initiatives, especially between 2013 and 2016. At that point, the concern was not getting caught up in a competition between US and China, which is very different from today. Definitely the US-China competition still remains a factor, but the Sino-Indian competition has also gained a lot of pace. the window to dismiss or ignore the China threat is almost non-existent today. It's something that India used in the previous years. As a country with limited resource and capital, a direct threat might actually work in helping India underline its priorities and areas when it needs to invest and strengthen its position, which in my opinion will be the Indian Ocean region.
Yes. Now, talking of China, China has been increasing its presence in the Indian Ocean ring and also in South Asia by building collaborations with, you know, countries like the Maldives, Sri Lanka, Mauritius, and Seychelles, threatening India's salience in that So how has this, how does this Sino-Indian competition actually impact India's Indo-Pacific engagement?
Right. It definitely impacts India's, it has an impact on India's engagements in the region. China's engagement with the island nations actually carries a lot of weight or directly impacts India's foreign policy choices and the security environment. The maritime neighborhood was something India did not have to worry about before, and not because there wasn't a problem per se, but because there really wasn't a competition threatening India's role. China's engagement in the region has undoubtedly changed that scenario today. China's not only competing with India for economic initiatives in the Indian Ocean region, but also it has the potential to become the additional or perhaps the alternative security provider to these island nations who have essentially relied on India for its larger security issues. This was perhaps one of the changes that led India to kind of start exploring Indo-Pacific engagements, because it did demand a review of its foreign policy engagements with its maritime neighbors. The change was quite significant with countries like Sri Lanka and Maldives, who took very public anti-India and pro-China stand. It might have, these changes in the neighborhood might have come as a shock to Delhi, but this wasn't overnight. There were already a lot of problems in India's relationship with the island nations. The primary being that these relations were put on sort of an autopilot from India's end, rather than actually engaging in strengthening these partnerships. China's visibility was essentially the first chance these island nations had in pursuing a new relationship which did not rely on India or which wasn't through India. So while the political, so I do think there has been a lot of impact, there has been a lot of changes brought about by how these island nations and how the littorals in the Indian Ocean have engaged with China, which has had an impact on India's own security environment and its own foreign policy engagements. The political environment, both in Sri Lanka and Maldives, have definitely improved today, and the relationship is better with change in government in both. But India will, I think India will still have to work hard to maintain these partnerships and its role in the region. It cannot, I don't think so, it can perhaps go back to what it had in the 70s, 80s and 90s, where it was the, or even the early 2000s, where it was the uncontested partner for them. So India will have to put in the work. And I think in Delhi is taking steps toward correcting this and placing a lot of focus on these island nations.
There seems to be many confusing signals from Delhi on the Quad. How do you assess India's approach to the Quad, and how is it likely to evolve in the days ahead?
I think the confusion on Quad is mostly comes from expectations. There has been an assumption that joining the Quad means containing China, and which includes, I think this is the part which is problematic, at least coming and looking at it from Delhi, is that sailing together with its Quad partners in the South China Sea, which is a hotspot, which is a hotspot and a problematic area. But I don't think so. India is going to kind of sail under a coalition challenging Chinese assertions in the South China Sea. Absolutely, yes. What happens in the South China Sea impacts Delhi's interest and what and India's relationship in the region. But the fact of the matter is, India also has very limited resources to be able to engage in the theater meaningfully, especially in military terms. India definitely has engagements with the region. Indian Navy sails through that region. It does exercises with littoral, especially with Vietnam, Singapore. We have long-standing relationship with these countries, but to be able to actually remain there and operate in this theater in a meaningful way in which to really challenge China's assertions. I don't think so. India has the capacity nor the capital or the bandwidth at this point in time. India's strengths lie in the Indian Ocean, and I think that's where India will focus first. The Quad is a great diplomatic, political, and even strategic grouping, which carries a lot of significance for the Indo-Pacific. It's four countries with key geographies across the Indo-Pacific. The issues they coordinate on, the issues they support, the issues they promote will carry tremendous weight. So I think, for example, one of the success stories of the Quad was really in 2004, which actually predates the 2007 Quad story history, which was in the aftermath of the Indian Ocean tsunami. So put together, the four countries have key expertise, knowledge, and experience in operating in different subregions in the Indo-Pacific. And I think that's what is valuable. So my guess is India will continue to hold discussions and dialogue at the Quad level and perhaps first outline or identify the priority areas and interest and take it from there.
Okay, now going beyond the Quad, there are a large number of big nations and small islands in the Indo-Pacific. How do you see India's engagement with them?
This is something that I think was outlined in Prime Minister Modi's speech at Shangri-La in 2018, which was really the first formal presentation of what India thinks and what India's interests in the Indo-Pacific are, where he outlined that India will collaborate in twos, threes, and fours, but also going beyond that and exploring. So India made it, I think from India's point of view, it was plenty clear that Quad is one of the relationship or one of the partnerships that India is looking at. There are many more, and some even more deeper, I think. And I think of France when I think about a partnership with India in the maritime domain that is significant, that is strategic, and that has actually developed faster than India's relationship with the US or Australia or with Japan. And France sits outside of the Quad at this point in time, but it has much more strategic history and deeper relationship with Delhi. I think India's partnership with France will only become stronger, and we can perhaps expect collaborations on a number of issues, from sustainable energy to maritime domain awareness and use of island territories for military exercises. This is one relationship where I think the intent matches the vision. There are others that India simply cannot ignore. And I think that would be the island nations and its immediate neighborhood. India's aspirations and its plan for the Indo-Pacific only become that much complicated if it does not enjoy the support of the region. So there will be times when India has to invest in it. And there will also be times when India might even find itself in a position where its strategic interest with big powers like US, Australia, France will collide with its relationship with its neighbors. For example, the case of Diego Garcia, the Mauritius case, where India actually voted in favor of Mauritius, and voted against US and UK. Australia voted for US and UK, and Japan abstained. So amongst the Quad, India was actually standing outside of that voting pattern. So I think there will be challenges. There will be difficulties, but I don't think so that would mean choosing one or the other. India would just have to prioritize and clearly articulate its interest. And it's normal. I mean, there are four sovereign nations with different interests, so there are bound to be differences. But I think most of all, it would be partnerships, and these partnerships will be at the core of driving, the interest will be at the core of driving these partnerships.
And finally, in your recently published paper, you mentioned the need of an issue-based partnership between India and its partners as a way forward to operationalize the Indo-Pacific construct. Could you please elaborate on that point?
Yeah, so this goes back to the fundamental difference between India and its partners. The priority areas between Australia, India, US, and Japan are different. The Indo-Pacific is the Indian and the Pacific Ocean. The priority area for India is the Indian Ocean region, for Australia is the South Pacific, for Japan is West Pacific, and for US is a little bit of all. So it will not be possible for all nations to be present equally across the Indo-Pacific. There are limited resources. If India has to invest in a place first, if push comes to shove, it'll be the Indian Ocean. Similarly for Australia, it'll be South Pacific. So I don't think so there's going to be kind of a convergence over overall Indo-Pacific vision or priorities. It'll be issue-based. So that's what I mean. I mean, you know, an effective model would be an issue-based partnerships. It's acknowledging that somewhere interests and priorities diverge, which is normal. As I mentioned, there are four sovereign nations spread across two oceans, which is vast. But there are issues and convergences that are common to all and of interest to all. Working based on these converging interests will likely have a more impact than collaboration simply on the Indo-Pacific. Plus, there are serious capacity and capital constraints across all four at this point in time, and it likely stay that way. So governments would have to really think through all investments and prioritize accordingly. So an issue-based partnership will perhaps have more impact and meaning as nations try to implement their Indo-Pacific visions through these initiatives and collaborations.
That was a very interesting perspective. Thank you, Darshana, for joining us at South Asia Chat. It was a pleasure having you.
Thank you so much. This was wonderful. Thank you.
You were listening to South Asia Chat. To learn more about our work, visit us at isas.nus.edu.sg.